This is Audible.
Written in the Scars.
Written by Adriana Locke.
Narrated by Kai Kennicott.
And Wen Ross. Prologue. Elin. 7 years earlier. Glancing over my shoulder, the water below is reflected in Ty's bright green eyes. His chiseled face and sun-kissed skin smiles back at me. I'm still no match for his grin. Without fail, a giddiness surges inside me when he flashes it my way. It's always been hard to believe he is my boyfriend. It's been even harder to wrap my head around being his fiancé. Being his wife tomorrow? Having his last name for the rest of my life? It's a level of elation I can't fathom. We really are getting married tomorrow, aren't we?
We are.
He bends forward, kissing me sweetly on the forehead. My body shifts with his as he draws a deep breath into his muscled chest. I let my back press onto his front, the beating of his heart felt through the thin fabric of my sundress. Are you nervous? I pick at the hem of my dress, waiting for any signs that my boyfriend of the last 6 years is reconsidering. His deep laugh dances over the top of Moon Mountain, our favorite spot, as he wraps his arms around me and pulls me closer to him.
Absolutely not.
He rests his chin on the top of my head.
We've talked about this day for years, Elin. Hell, even when I was 15, I knew I'd marry you one day.
That day is in a few hours, I whisper.
You aren't nervous, are you?
He angles himself so you can see my face, his tone etched with worry that maybe I am. No, I laugh, a flutter of excitement creeping into my belly. I feel like we're already married. Tomorrow just makes it official. Our fingers lace together on my lap. My engagement ring, something that Ty put off buying until he could save his own money, glitters in the late afternoon sunlight. It's probably not worth a ton monetarily, but knowing he saved for it, went to the jewelry store and picked it out, called my father and asked for my hand in marriage, even though he knew he'd get it, makes it worth more to me than anything in the world. It'll be the two of us, I remark. Mr. and Mrs. Witt.
It'll be just the two of us, until I get you pregnant.
He breathes against my ear.
I want to have a damn basketball team with you. Boys, all of them.
Maybe one girl? The heat of his lips sears against my skin as he presses kisses behind my ear and down my neck. His free hand lies flat against my stomach, before easing slowly towards the apex of my thighs, bunching my dress and pulling it up into a ball at my navel. His palm rests at the base of my belly, his fingers hovering, taunting me with their proximity to my opening. We can start trying now, I offer, my breathing stuttered. He stills, the only movement coming from the rise and fall of his chest.
I love ye.
He squeezes my hand.
I know I've said it a million times, but I do love you. I've always loved you. You're everything to me.
I love you too. Scrambling to find the way to say all I'm feeling aloud, I realize, maybe there aren't words. Maybe that's what love is. Something so beautiful and perfect that you can only feel it. Snuggling as close to him as I can, I reiterate my words from before. I love you, Ty. For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Chapter 1. Elin, I dare you. Shooting Lindsay Watson a dirty look, I plop down in the chair beside her workstation. Swiveling side to side in an extra hairdresser's chair, I watch her take the final snips of Becca Snowden's long chestnut hair. Bet you look so good as a redhead, Elin, Lindsay gushes, ignoring my empty threat. A crimson would make those green eyes of yours pop. Just let me. Oh, you would look so great with a little red, Becca chimes in. I'll keep basic variations of my dishwater blonde, thank you, I reply. Pretty sure my kindergarten class might freak out if I showed up with something new. Lindsay laughs, her voice trickling across blown, the salon she'd opened up a few years ago. Her blue eyes twinkle in the way they do when someone is living the life of their dreams, when everything is just the way it should be. It's an amazing feeling that I can remember well, if distantly. I let the chair come to a rest, my playful energy now falling with Becca's hair. Lindsay makes small talk with Becca as she removes the cape and leads her to the cash register in front. light shining in the windows from a beautiful fall afternoon. The city square in Jackson, Indiana, population 6,000, is bustling outside. I'm going to run to the fountain and grab a drink, Becca says, digging through her purse. Do you want me to bring you guys anything? No, but I think I'll walk over there and grab a bump when I leave here, I say. Damn, I love those things. I haven't tried that. It's my favorite, I tell her. A cinnamon citrus drink that's seriously the best thing in the world. We moved here my 7th grade year. After school that first day, Lindsay walked me to the fountain and insisted I order one. I think we became best friends after that. Of course we did. How could you not want to be friends with someone with such great taste? Lindsay jokes. Well, you did marry my brother, so I'd say your taste is impeccable. Wait, Becca says, turning to look at Lindsay. You married Elin's brother? I did. I befriended her so I could meet her twin. Lindsay sticks her tongue out at me. Jiggs was the goal. Elin was a bonus. Becca raises a brow. Jiggs? That's his name? It's James, I clarify. I'm not sure why we call him Jiggs, but we do. Everyone does. Looking at the floor so they don't see my eyes, I hide the fact that I'm lying. He's called Jiggs because our father was a woodworker in his free time. My brother was obsessed with the jigsaw when he was a little boy, and Dad started calling him Jiggs. I don't share that, because it'll just bring back the sadness I've managed to keep from completely swamping me today. Hey, we're having a bonfire this weekend, Lindsay tells Becca. You should come. I don't know. This place still feels so awkward to me. Becca hands Lindsay her credit card. I've been here a few months now, and I just feel so out of place. I've been considering going back to Texas. That's why you should go to the bonfire, I point out. Meet people. Have fun. Becca shrugs, not looking convinced. Maybe. The bell chimes as the front door is cracked open, a blast of cool autumnal air drifting through the salon. It brings with it the scent of grilled hamburgers, crunchy leaves, and a certain spicy cologne that makes my breath catch in my throat. In unison, although for different reasons, our heads snap to the doorway. Becca gasps. Lindsay glances at me through the corner of her eye. My heart topples to the floor. Tyler Witt's emerald gaze finds mine like there's nowhere to look but at me. It's heavy, pushing me into my seat from across the room. I can't breathe. Even with my jaw hanging open much wider than I'd like, I can't draw in enough oxygen to make me not feel like I'm 2 seconds from passing out. He just stands there, not looking at me, but seeing right through me, like he's studying every thought going through my mind. Once upon a time, that look, the feeling of being the focus of his attention, was the most comforting feeling in the world. Now, it's downright violating. Fuck him. My chair rolls to a stop, the toe of my sneaker dragging across the floor. I rip my eyes from his, heat pinking my cheeks, and I'm not sure which emotion is causing it because every feeling in the world is roaring through me. I've imagined this scenario 1,000 times. The moment I saw him again has played over and over in my mind. The vision always looks different. Everything from us running in slow motion to each other, kissing like our lives depended on it, to me throwing every punch and kick I could manage straight into his gorgeous, frustrating face was possible. Regardless of the version, I just hoped that maybe, just maybe, time would have weakened our connection. That I wouldn't feel the maddening tug that I've always felt around him. That somehow I'd be able to hold on to the anger that I've woken up with and gone to bed with for 43 nights now. That I would see him and instantly forget all the reasons I loved him, and would remember all the reasons why I convinced myself I don't. Looking at him across the salon, nothing has diminished, not even a little bit. It's still there, all crackly and electrifying and enveloping and heartbreaking. Fidgeting in my seat, I take a deep breath and try to get my bearings. The fear of uncertainty rocks through me. If we have to interact, it'll end in a fight. That's the only thing I'm certain of. It's the way we operate now. Ty's Adam's apple bobs as he forces a swallow and hesitates, just a split second before walking fully into the salon. After a look that tells me everything and nothing all at once, He clears his throat and pulls his gaze away from me. The scent of his cologne. The same scent he's worn since I bought him the first bottle with my first real paycheck, drifts around the room.
Hey, Linz,
he says, his tone warm yet distant.
Jigs around?
When he speaks, my throat clenches shut, trying to bury all the emotions that threaten to spill over. The emotions I don't have half the handle on that I thought I did. Having him here feels like yet another punch to the gut. No, he's at home, I think. He was working on the truck in the barn. Ty nods, running a hand through his thick black hair that's spiking up every which way. His angular jaw is dotted with stubble, more than a day's worth. I know what it would feel like to run my hand against it, how his head would cock to the side just before a playful smile kissed his lips. I can imagine the feeling of the scars marring his sculpted back from the mining accident that changed our lives in such horrible ways last year. I can envision his crooked smile, telling me everything would be okay. Clearly, that's a lie. His 6'1" body, clad in a pair of jeans and a clean white t-shirt, looks lean and healthy like the basketball hero he's lauded to be. He looks good. He looks like my Ty. Again. Fuck him. Gripping the chair, I forbid myself from blurting the millions of questions rustling around my mind. I won't ask, because I won't give him the power by speaking first. It's childish, I'm sure, but I don't care. I have to survive however I can. Knowing I held tight to something makes me a little less powerless in the most defeating situation of my life. The limp in his gait is now fainter than I remember, and I want to ask him how he's feeling too. But I don't, because he hasn't given a damn about how I'm feeling since he left. My hands fold over my stomach, and I fight back the tears that wet the inside corners of my eyes. I won't cry. Not here. Not in front of him. The man that looks like the person I fell so madly in love with. But that's not him anymore. Hell, I'm not sure who I am these days. Just know that together we're too different, too volatile to work. Lindsay looks at me out of the corner of her eye, her lips pursing together in sympathy for the brokenness I feel. She knows. She's the only person that knows the depths of my pain because she was there for it all. A front row seat to the misery. I glance at Ty and he's looking at me. The sides of his lips begin to tilt upward, to flash me that cocky smile that made me fall for him in the first place. As my breath catches in my throat, his start of a smile catches on his face and he looks at Lindsay.
I'll head over there. If you see him, tell him I'm looking for him.
Ty says, a gruffness to his tone. He glances at me again. My optimism spirals entirely too high, waiting, hoping that he says something, anything. Hi, screw you. How are you? I'd take any of them. But I don't get a single word, and that slices me to my already bleeding core. I don't want to hurt. Not anymore. He turns, jamming one hand in a pocket, and pulls the door open with the other and walks out of my life again, as abruptly as he did the first time. Holy shit, Becca exclaims, dropping her purse on the counter as the door swings shut. The keychain hanging off the side clatters against the top. I snap my head to her, my annoyance level brimming, and get a warning glance from Lindsay. I change my mind. If that man will be at the bonfire, count me in. Who was that? Lindsay starts, but I cut her off. That's my husband, I growl, sliding off the plastic chair and letting it twirl round and around as I barrel my way out the back door.
Chapter 2. Ty. The leaves managed to turn colors and dry up to nothing while I was gone. They blow in the breeze and rattle as they bounce down the path that leads to the detached barn on Jig's property. I wonder if Elin has brought out an old pair of jeans and sweatshirt and filled them with leaves. It's one of our favorite things to do this time of year, and I get roped into it without fail. I've wondered about it a handful of times, but I haven't driven past the house to see if the scarecrow's there. I've been in town long enough to see her car behind, blown and pull in. That wasn't the plan. Sure, seeing her was the ultimate objective, but I was going to sort it out once I got here. Talk to Jigs. See where things stand. But I saw her car at Blown, The truck pulled in on its own. The sound of jigs banging on metal rings down the path. I have half a notion to get back into my pickup and leave. Even though he's my best friend, he's Elin's twin brother, and their relationship is much more than your normal sibling banter. Their parents died in a boating accident 6 years ago, not long after our wedding, and that brought the two of them, although already close, even closer together. Seeing Jig should be interesting. We haven't talked since I left town either. I'm a jackass for just stopping by, springing this on him, but he's my best friend, the status of my marriage notwithstanding. At least, I hope so. What's up? Jigs asks, bringing me out of my reverie as I approach the barn door. It's about time you show up. I need help getting this thing running. You're a shit mechanic. Relief washes over me at his easy, non-violent greeting. He nods and leans against the doorframe of the rusty truck, the paint peeling off the antiquated structure. Truth, but that's why we're friends. You're not. Asshole. I laugh, grasping his shoulder as I pass deeper into the barn. What made you decide to bless us with your presence? The caution is there, the yellow flag warning me to proceed carefully. That he's Elin's brother before he's my friend. I knew coming back to town would mean answering for things. Looking into the eyes of the people I care about and seeing fury or annoyance. Or a broken heart. Imagining how to handle the judgment was easier in the farmhouse, 50 miles away. You gonna answer me, Wit? His work gloves come off and go hurling across the barn. I'm glad to see that ugly mug of yours, but you have some explaining to do. I know. Cringing and gathering whatever pride I can find lying around, I suck in a deep breath. I'm sorry. Not good enough. What do you want to know? I ask, unsure where to even start. Everything is so scrambled, I don't know which way to go. Where the hell you been? North of Terre Haute. Cecil Kruger's farm. He was a friend of my dad's back in the day. You didn't think to call? To answer any of our thousands of fucking calls? My head drops, my gaze landing on a discarded pop tab in the dirt floor. I smash my phone and didn't replace it. I was going to. My chin lifts. Look, I'll be honest with you, Jigs. The quiet was nice. No fighting, no reminder of how fucked up I am or how fucked up everything is. Huh, so you just fucked it up worse? He laughs angrily. I figured it might do Elin and I both some good to take a break. To, you know, have some time to think about things. Dust covers my boot as I kick the ground, waiting on him to reply. I'm at his mercy. Whatever he doles out, I deserve. Why did you come back? Why now? He asks finally. Because it's time. Our eyes meet over the hood of the truck. He searches mine, looking for the meaning of my words. Together, our heads begin to nod in understanding. Look, you can't expect things to go back to the way they were, he says, picking up a wrench. I don't. Then what do you expect? It's a simple question, one I cannot answer. I don't even know what I've come home to. My wife hates me. My best friend is skeptical of me. I even resigned from coaching the high school basketball team before I left. The one true passion of my life. What is left? Why didn't you come talk to me or to court if you didn't want to talk to me about things with my sister? Why let it get like this, Ty? I wish I knew, I mutter. Jig sighs, resting his forearm on the truck's frame. We worried about you. No one could get a hold of you. Elin was a fucking disaster, Ty, and I honestly thought she was going to have a breakdown. The only person to see you was Pettis.
Whoa, wait. Pettis?
Yeah. Said he saw you in Rockville a couple weeks ago. Racking my brain for where Pettis would have seen me, I come up blank. I didn't see him. I wasn't anywhere to see him to begin with. Before I can think it through, Jig speaks. Part of me wants to kill you and toss you in the lake back there, he says, jutting his thumb over his shoulder. Might be easier. Oh, it would, which is exactly why I won't do it. Pussy, I tease. Jigs laughs, shoving away from the truck. Why did you leave, man? Before I can answer, his gaze narrows. The real reason, Ty, cut the shit. Give it to me straight.
You know what it was?
I ask, a burn igniting in my chest. It was like getting smashed by that timber at work destroyed my entire life. The pain in my core smolders, taking the loneliness of not having Elin, the loss of my team, the fury of losing everything I've ever wanted and worked for, and stokes the flames until it's scalding. You can't go through all that, Ty, and not come out affected. Your leg was snapped in half a couple of hundred yards below the surface of the earth. We carried you out on a stretcher. His tone is somber. We thought you were going to fucking die. Of course that'll mess with you. I nod. Yeah, but I could have stayed sane. I could have managed everything better, but I didn't. I let my marriage go to shit. I walked away from the team. They should have started practice this week. I looked at my watch at exactly 5 o'clock on Monday and imagined them lined up at half court, wondering why Reynolds was in front of them and not me. I wonder what they thought, what they were told. How many voice messages were left in my inbox by them? Dustin in particular. He'd have taken my leaving the hardest of them all, and I should have reached out. But I didn't. I failed them all too. It was the right choice. I say aloud, maybe more for myself than for Jiggs. Yeah, maybe, but you aren't just their coach. You're their friend, their go-to. You can't just say fuck it. I already did. He looks at me and waits. Look, I don't know why I'm here, I admit. Elin hates me. Yeah, probably. I wish I could hate her. Throwing me another cautionary glance, he strolls across the barn and gathers his gloves. So what are you going to do? What's the plan, Sir Fuck-Up? I know you went to Blown. Lindsay called and Elin left right after you. I'll put it to you like this. My first move didn't go as expected. You couldn't have expected her to run to you. Cord calls her Pitbull for a reason. I can't fight the grin that spreads across my lips. Her fire and her fight are my favorite things about her. I didn't, I admit. But I didn't expect such a coldness from her, like she despises me. Can you blame her? No, I gulp. But she told me to leave. I don't give a fuck what Lindsay tells me, Jiggs barks, his eyes lighting up. I'm not leaving her. I don't give a damn if she throws my shit in the yard and kicks my ass out the door. I'll sit on the stoop until she lets me back in. Get my drift? I was at fucking rock bottom. I toss back, offended that he thinks I just took a vacation for my life. Don't you get that? The accident, the pain, the bills adding up because there's no overtime. Watching E have to kill herself to keep us both going, when that's my fucking job. Having to get into the savings fund we've been putting aside for 8 years to get in vitro. I couldn't even fuck my wife without it being on some motherfucking calendar. Then, month after month, she takes the goddamn test and it's negative. And I have to look at her face and realize it's me that failed her. I shout, my face hot to the touch. Damn it, Jiggs. I didn't leave her because it sounded easier. There was no other choice. I had no idea, he whispers, his face paler than I've ever seen it. Turning away from him, I drag lungful after lungful of air into my body and focus on calming down. When I turn back around minutes later, Jiggs is sitting on a cooler watching me. I just wanted to make things better, I say. I couldn't stand fighting with her. There's nothing worse than looking in the face of the person you love and seeing disgust. Indifference. Wondering if she thinks you're lazy or worthless, or feels like you can't even do your job and give her the baby you've both talked about since before you were even married. Ty, man, I really didn't know. Do you know what that feels like? Do you know how emasculating it is to not be able to properly fuck your wife? I pause, letting that sink in. The one time she did get pregnant, she miscarried. Do you remember that a few years ago? Yeah, well, she never got over that. Maybe it would have eased up if I could have made it happen again, but I fucking can't. I scream. I swear to God, it's just too much pressure. That's the problem. It all came to a head the day I left, I say, a hollowness to my voice that even I hear. We lashed out. I think the hurt we both were feeling just hid behind so much anger. It's easier to be pissed off than to feel pissed on all the time. Shaking my head, I lean against the work table. Saying this aloud to someone else feels good. feels manageable. Jiggs offers nothing in response, so I keep going. She told me to leave, and I left. I figured it couldn't get any worse if I left, and it sure as shit wasn't going to get any better if I stayed. I miss her. I sigh. No matter what I try to think about, it's related to her. High school, the mine, the lake. My jaw clenches as I look at him. Our lives are one and the same, you know? Everything we've been through in our lives, we've done together. I held her hand at your parents' funeral. Remember your mom's lemon pie every time I go through the produce section. I know she hates storms, and love being there for her when she reaches out. So fix it. Jiggs raises his brows. Go to her. Talk it out. I can't. You can, he laughs. You're just a pussy. Maybe I am, I chuckle. But I'm afraid I'll make it worse. Jiggs rustles through a red cooler and pulls out a beer. Want one? He asks, extending a bottle. No, thanks anyway. The top flies off and hits the dirt floor. He takes a long swallow, wiping his face with the back of his hand. You coming by the bonfire tomorrow night? I'll pass. You can't pass, asshole. We do it every year. Grabbing a wrench, I start to work on the truck's alternator. Yeah, we always have. But some things have changed. Maybe in your life, but your issues aren't fucking up mine. You better show up or I might have to kick your ass. He waits for me to respond. Elin's not coming, if that helps. Where's she going? I ask too quickly. Some teaching thing or something, he says, his voice on the bridge of a laugh. So be here. We'll see. He leans under the hood with me, holding a wire out of my way. I glance at him out of the corner of my eye. By the way, I say, smirking, you can't whip my ass. Let's not get it twisted. He laughs, smacking my shoulder. Walking out of the barn, he leaves me with his broken truck and my thoughts of the woman I love too much to even love at all.
Chapter 3. Elin. The back door groans as I push it open into the kitchen. Letting it swing shut behind me, I sit my bag brimming with papers I need to grade on the kitchen counter. The thump resonates through the room, bouncing off the buttery colored walls that Ty and I took forever choosing. I love this color, I squeal, holding up a color swatch and flashing it in front of his face. It would be perfect in the kitchen for our new house.
It looks like piss.
He grabs my wrist to stop the sample from waving erratically. It does not, I pout. It's beautiful. Instead of pulling the sample out of my hand, he tugs me closer to him. Leaning down, his lips hover inches from mine.
The color is piss, Mrs. Witt. But if you like it, then we'll take it. Because my eyes won't be on it when I'm there. They'll be on you.
Oh, I can feel the heat of his kiss lingering on my lips. Even nearly 7 years later, as my heart rapid fires in my chest, he always let me have what I wanted. Always made me feel like the only person in the world that mattered. How did things go so terribly wrong? The room feels empty, so barren, even with the knick-knacks sitting on the counters and the dishes from last night's dinner in the sink. It's my home, but it doesn't feel comforting. There's no contentment to be found here. It's been this way since he left. Even though I've purged the room of all of his physical belongings because I can't look at them without wanting to curl up in a ball and die. That, or throw them into a fire pit out back and burn them to ashes. The little nuances of him still exist and still hit me hard. The oil stain on the floor beside the door is still there. A tarry-looking spot made from his mine boots lying there after a shift. No amount of cleaner will remove it. I've tried them all. The little basket that hangs under the cabinets is now filled with ink pens and highlighters. Not for any reason other than to take the place of Ty's keys and gum packets. Even though it's technically not empty now, it feels that way. Because what's in it isn't what should be. His face from only an hour ago pops into my mind, and I squeeze my eyes shut. Like somehow that will make it go away. Like the action will barricade his rich, warm voice from echoing in my ears. The door creaks again and I jump, my eyes jerking to the door, my breath automatically ceasing. I watch and wait for it to swing open, for a knock, for a certain voice to call through the air. because only two people use that door, me and Ty. The wind rattles the glass against the wood and my hopes dash. Damn it, Elin, I mutter, my spirit sinking faster than I can gather them. I don't miss the defeat in my shoulders or the squiggle in my bottom lip as I glance into the living room. The little hairs on the back of my neck stand on end as I stare at the back of the empty sofa. Another memory hits me. Guess what happened to me today? I saunter on the sofa and stand with my hands on my hips, trying not to melt down. He looks at me again. I went to the bank to take some money out of the savings to pay the house insurance. His face slips just a bit, the corners of his mouth dropping ever so slightly. Forcing a swallow, I suck in my breath and continue. There's over $1,000 missing from our account. I watch him with bated breath, hoping to see him startle or confusion cross his features. He doesn't look at me. He just watches the television like it's the most interesting thing in the world. Ty?
Yeah?
His jaw is set, flexing under his grimace.
I took some cash. What's the problem?
What's the problem? I exclaim, my head spinning. It's $1,000! It's the money to start our family. What did you do with it? He swings off the sofa, cringing as his weight settles on his leg.
It's my fucking money too, Elin. I don't have to explain shit to you.
If it were 20 or 50 bucks, hell, if it was $100, I'd agree. Our heated gazes meet, mine in disbelief, his in some state of defense that I don't understand. I think back on the past few weeks, and a chill slowly twists itself through my body. The hours he goes missing, the sudden secretiveness of his phone, the hushed conversations, the distance he's put between us, the fights we have that start over nothing, and the more than willingness on his part to sleep on the couch. My stomach hits the floor, my knees wobbling. Ty, I ask, my voice shaking, what did you do with that money?
It's none of your damn business.
Although his eyes blaze, his tone is more uncertain now as the words drop, weighted with insinuations. He stands, babying the leg that was hurt when a wall burst in the mine and snapped his fibula. He hasn't been the same since, physically or mentally. It's put a strain on our marriage as I've tried to keep up with him emotionally and financially. Ty? I choke out. He seems to understand my suggestion without me saying it, and I'm glad. I don't think I could ask him out loud if he was planning on leaving me, if he had another woman somewhere waiting on him. I couldn't handle that. I don't care how bad things have been, I can't stomach an affair. The thought alone sends bitter bile creeping up my throat. If that's true, I say, squeezing the words past the lump in my throat. Then, get out.
Oh, you're throwing me out now?
He asks, his voice rising.
Is that how it works?
Were you fucking around on me? I cry.
Was I fucking around on you?
He huffs.
Are you serious? What, you think maybe I wanted to have sex that wasn't dictated by a calendar and thermometer?
A laugh in his tone. The mockery he's making of our attempt to have a baby incites me. Fuck you, I say.
I'd love to, but we haven't checked the date yet.
He says, amping himself up. How dare you? How dare you throw that in my face? I shout, tears stinging my eyes.
A spade's a spade, E.
My face heats, my cheeks scalding as the tears wash over them. Are you cheating on me?
Elin.
He scoffs, like my name is dirty coming out of his mouth. Are you?
You want me to? Would that make this all so much easier for you? You can hate me and feel good about blaming everything on me.
Yeah, I want you to. Of course I do. I roll my eyes. I'm so sick of this, Ty.
Not as sick of it as me.
Then go! He storms by, taking a wide circle so we don't accidentally touch, so I can't reach out and grab his arm. My jaw slams against the hardwood, words begging to be spoken, but I can't find them. I can only watch his back flex under his shirt as he walks out of my life, the door squeaking behind him. A full body shiver yanks me back to reality. To a kitchen that lacks the smell of his coffee or the sound of the television in the other room. With a lump in my throat, I head into the living room. Grabbing a pillow off the sofa and pressing it to my chest, I fight back the sorrow by setting my jaw and grasping for the anger lurking just beneath the surface. It's just because I saw him. That's it. Don't let this spiral, Elin, I say loud. I miss him. My God, I miss him. Tears stream, an endless testament to the emotion, the dreams, the rejection, the failure that swirls inside my soul. Maybe that's why he was eager to leave. Maybe that's why it just took a simple shot for me to go, and he hauled ass out the door. Maybe it's because after all these years he realizes what a joke I am of a woman, one that can't conceive. With me, he can't play catch in the backyard with a little boy that looks like him, or tuck a little girl into bed that looks like me. There's no hope for any of that with me, and that's the most humiliating thing anyone can ever experience. Yet, here I sit, spewing hate his way, secretly wanting him to return. My words say how horrible he was for not being there for me, and that's true. But my heart misses finding the rhythm of his in the middle of the night. I can't do this, I sputter, throwing the pillow across the room. It lands at the foot of the entertainment center, brushing against it just hard enough to rattle off a metal figurine in the shape of a coal bucket Ty's grandpa gave him right before he died, one miner to another. I watch it free fall to the floor, almost in slow motion. It falls end over end, twisting and turning in the air before it lands solidly on the carpet. I know what I have to do, or rather, what I can't do anymore. The end of a journey of my own. Racing to the garage, maneuvering the house by memory because I can't see through the tears stinging my eyes, I grab a box. Coming in just as quickly, I start picking up what's left of Ty's belongings and shoving them inside. I don't think about it. I focus on the fact that I can't live in this perpetual state of uncertainty anymore. I can't live loving a man that doesn't want me, in a situation in which I'm doomed to fail. It's time to accept reality. Using the tail of my shirt, I sop up the wetness from my face. The coal bucket figurine goes into the box. It's joined by a picture of him from high school, holding the state title up in the air. My hands shake as I pick up his grandmother's quilt off the quilt rack and lay it on top of the other items. The pale pink linen is darkened by the fluid dripping off my chin. Sniffing up the snot that dangles onto my lips, I start towards the bedroom where a few articles of his clothing still reside in the closet. I stomp by the room that would have been the nursery with the practice eyes straight ahead, so I don't break down. It's a dream that will never happen. I grab his Tennessee Arrows hat off the hook on the closet door and dig out his favorite t-shirt from the dresser drawer. Before I can toss them into the box, I catch the scent of his cologne. And that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. I fall to my knees, the box dropping to the floor in front of me. I hold his hat to my chest and sob.
Chapter 4. Ty. I rustle through a trash bag against the wall and find a clean t-shirt. Pulling it over my head, I notice the smell of the laundry detergent. It's some brand I picked up at the laundromat yesterday. Waves of overly perfumed, cheap flowers drench my senses. It's not so much what it smells like that drives me nuts, but what it doesn't. It doesn't smell like home. Elin always uses the same brand, the same one her mother used. Every time I do a load at a random laundromat with a box of suds from the dispenser, I'm reminded how much I miss her, and how every little part of my life goes back to her. Even my fucking laundry soap. Collapsing on the futon in Cord McCurry's spare room, I rest my head against the rough material and close my eyes. Bracing for the onslaught of memories that floods me, every time I don't intentionally focus on something else, I'm halfway relieved when the sound of footsteps thud through the room. You all right? Cord's voice echoes from the hallway. Yeah. A few moments later, his head pokes around the corner. His sandy brown hair is cut short. His jaw set as he takes me in and decides how to approach. There's food and shit in the refrigerator. Washer and dryer are in the room off the kitchen. He leans against the doorframe and waits on me to answer. Thanks for letting me stay here. Hey, you've let me bunk with you a time or two. Glad to repay the favor. You can stay here for as long as you need to, he says, a slight slant to his grin. It's one I return readily.
An understanding between two men that met as a couple of rowdy boys in high school. Cord was a handful when he moved to Jackson, getting suspended for fighting on his very first day in school. I jumped in, not being able to stand watching a new kid from foster care, a fact that I learned from my mother the night before, getting mauled by Shane Pettis, resident asshole, and got myself 3 free days to boot. From that day on, Cord has had my back and I've had his. He's the most dependable human being I know, which is why I called him when it became apparent I wouldn't be going home tonight. Let's hope to fuck I won't be here long, I mumble. His chin dips just a touch. It was probably just a shock to her to see you out of nowhere. Just give her a minute to adjust. Do you know how bad I want to fucking go home and be with my wife? How I miss her? How I want to just forget all this bullshit and go back to the way things were before the fucking accident? He chuckles, his eyes sparkling. I can imagine. She basically wipes your ass for you. I don't know how you're surviving. A small laugh escapes me, too. That's true, but it's not even about that, Court. I don't even know what to do with myself. Follow your gut. Always trust your gut. He winks and shoves off the door. Look, I'm taking Yogi for a swim at the lake. You want anything while I'm gone? You and that fucking dog, I mutter, falling back on the stiff pillow again. Laugh all you want. She doesn't put me through this shit. He teases before pulling the door closed behind him. The futon springs rip into my back. They scrape against the scars etched there from the accident. The same ones Elin used to feather her fingers across at night while I slept. Oh, how far we've fallen. Loving her is so damn easy. It's as natural as breathing or the beating of a heart. Even when we were hurling insults at the very moment my rope was being frayed, a couple of seconds before she asked me to leave and I bolted, I loved her. That's never been a question. It's making life work around the love that's hard. Life doesn't care about feelings. It couldn't give a shit about who you love and want to be with. It keeps tossing crap your way, trying to break you until all you know is the chaos of it all. A memory flashes into my mind.
What happened to your back?
Mrs. Kruger asks as I enter the farmhouse, her silver hair like a halo in the early evening sun. I place my sweaty shirt over my shoulders. Drops of sweat roll down my jaw and drip onto my chest from a long, hot day working for her husband in the fields. It was from an accident in the mine. She stops stirring a pot on the stove and turns to me. Her apron hangs over her round belly and she grabs the hem and dries her hands.
You know, it's better to have a scar than a bruise.
Really? Why's that?
Bruises go away, Tyler. Scars stick around to prove you showed up for life. That you lived. That you fought. That you loved.
She peers at me over the top of her glasses.
Oh, I knew it the night you came here, asking to talk to my husband that your heart was broken. I've seen a lovesick man a time or two in my years, but can I give you some advice?
I nod, my body breaking out in a cold sweat under her scrutiny.
What would you say about your heart? Would you say your heart is bruised or scarred, Tyler?
Scarred in every direction possible, I whisper without hesitation. She starts to smile but catches herself.
When did you know you loved her?
From the moment I saw her.
I see,
she says, her voice barely a whisper. She thinks for a long moment before taking a deep breath.
You can't expect a relationship to succeed based on the love you felt at the beginning. It succeeds because you continue to build on it until the end.
She removes her glasses and smiles.
Your heart will be more scarred than your back by the end of your lifetime. That is, if you live the right way.
A warmth builds in my core, my feet shuffling beneath me.
Go home, Tyler.
She whispers.
Go build on the beginning.
Her words ring through my mind as I try to find a comfortable spot on this godforsaken futon. It sounds simple to build on what we had at the beginning. So simple, in fact, that I'd race back to town sure as shit that I would find Elin. We'd see each other, she'd break into a tight smile, I'd smile back, and we'd figure this out. Never did I expect the coldness in her posture, the disdain that filled her beautiful green irises. Anger? Yeah. Sadness? Sure. But hatred? It stopped me in my tracks. Swinging my legs to the side, my footsteps create a circle in the room as I attempt to block out the idea that has me more worried than any other. She doesn't want to fix this. The itch of frustration working its way up my spine has my skin on fire. This is my fault. This entire fuck-up is my mistake in so many ways. Taking a deep breath, I glance around the room. It feels empty, and I don't think it has anything to do with the lack of furniture. Rising, I grab a pillow and a blanket out of another bag and toss them on the futon. It's going to kill my back to sleep here, but I have no inclination to get a bed. Buying furniture seems like planting roots somewhere, admitting that my marriage is over, and while I know it just might be, I can't see physical proof of that. I might sleep on a futon for the rest of my life. Getting as comfortable as possible, I try to block out Elin and focus on what I need to do. Yet her face slips across my mind as my eyes drift closed. "Remember the good that used to be in me, Elin," I whisper, the words skirting past the lump in my throat. Not the failure. Not the weakness. Not the man sitting on the couch popping pain pills with no job. I swallow, forcing the lump down, and try to remember every line in her face. "I'm sorry, baby," I whisper again. "I am so fucking sorry."
Chapter 5. Elin. "When you started Ashby Farms?" I ask Jiggs, watching him take a marshmallow out of a bowl on the middle of his kitchen counter and pop it into his mouth.
"Monday. It's harvest time, so it'll be solid work for a while. Hopefully long enough for me to figure something else out."
"I wish someone else would start hiring permanently," I sigh. "I hate that the mine is basically your only hope for a consistent job."
"Even it's not consistent now."
Jiggs shrugs, swiping another marshmallow.
"It's good money, though. I'll be glad to go back."
I watch him toss the candy into the air and try and catch it in his mouth. "Mom didn't want you working there."
"No, but she would have understood. It's Jackson, Elin. It's what we do here. Grandpa did it, Dad did it, it's our life. You know that."
He tosses it up again. When it hits the floor, he looks at me and smiles.
"May as well get used to it."
He leans over on the island and presses his lips together, holding steady until Lindsay gives in and kisses him. Laughing, he swipes another pillow of sugar.
"I gotta figure something out, right?"
He catches Lindsay's eye and they exchange a look that piques my interest. "What am I missing?" I ask, furrowing my brow. Before I can continue on and prod my brother and best friend, I hear a man's voice.
"Where are y'all at?"
"In the kitchen," Lindsay shouts. She grabs bags of chips and tosses them into a picnic basket, just as Cord comes into the kitchen with his trademark wide smile. Cord McCurry has hung out with us since high school. We have a special friendship, one that's hard to explain. Maybe it's because he stayed with my family for a year or so after high school, when my father got him a job at the mine. I don't know. All I do know is that Cord and I don't see each other daily, sometimes not weekly even, but we always seem to be there for each other. It's almost a brother-sister relationship, although not quite. Cord would never allow someone that close to him.
"Hey,"
he says, patting me on the shoulder as he walks by.
"Smells good in here, Lindsay. What you got I can sample? I'm starving." "You can wait like the rest of us,"
Jiggs says, reaching for another marshmallow. "Oh, whatever, Jiggs," I laugh. "You've been into every dish we've made today. You probably still have brownies on your fingers." He looks at his hands with a smirk before glancing up at his wife.
"That's not all that's on these fingers."
"Jiggs!" Lindsay blushes and tosses a towel at him, making us laugh.
"What, are you denying it?"
Jiggs teases. "Do you guys want to take everything out back?" Lindsay says in an attempt to change the subject. She glances out the window towards the fire that's starting to glow as the afternoon sun sets behind it. Upwards of 30 people are already here, lingering around the fire. "I think it's time to get this party started."
"Sure thing,"
Cord says, grabbing the cooler of snacks Lindsay and I put together earlier. Jiggs balances the picnic basket on another cooler and they head out the back door. Once they're gone, Lindsay leans against the counter and watches me. "You okay?" "Yeah," I say, straightening out my red and gray flannel shirt, my fingers only slightly fidgety. "Why?" You've not quite been here mentally all day, just wondering if everything's okay. I snort, turning my back to her. I don't want to dampen the party by bringing up the fact that I feel like crawling in a hole and sleeping away my life. That I don't even want to be here. That seeing Ty has brought back in vivid technicolor the moment that forever changed the way I'll feel about him. The memory slams into me. Dr. Walker sits down on the stool in front of the examining table and looks up at me through his black wire-rimmed glasses. He takes a deep breath as he sits my chart on the little table behind him. My hands find the edge of the white paper hanging off the sides and crumple it in my fists. "What's wrong?" I ask, my voice trembling. I'm on the cusp of breaking down, my heart beating so fast in my chest that I can barely sneak in a breath. It's been this way since he left, and I can't take it anymore. I feel like I'm going to die, like the world is starting to crush me with its weight. It's why I'm here, to fix it, to get something to help regain control of my emotions. But something's wrong. I can see it in his eyes, a benefit of seeing the same doctor since I was 14. The glasses are removed and he clears his throat.
Where's Ty?
I don't know. I admit through the burn in my throat.
Is anyone here with you today?
No. Why? What's wrong, Dr. Walker?
I'm sorry to tell you this, but your blood work showed you're in the process of a miscarriage, Elin.
My world stops, yet starts a slow spin that wobbles me slightly as I take in his words. My gut churns, like I've drank too many margaritas on a thirsty Thursday with Lindsay. But something itches in the back of my psyche that tells me a margarita might be helpful right about now. I'm starting to sway in my seat, but no amount of grabbing the edges of the table helps. What? I ask, trying to focus on the wrinkles in his face. I'm not pregnant. It's impossible, I say, a sad laugh rolling past my lips. Surely I misunderstood. The universe wouldn't do this to me, wouldn't take away the one thing Ty and I have wanted more than anything else. It wouldn't do this to me now, when everything else is falling apart. I won't be able to take it.
I'm sorry,
he says finally.
You were just a few weeks along.
The rest is muffled by a screaming only I can hear. My heart thunders so loud I think it's going to explode as I touch my stomach and then pull back, like they're going to be burnt by contact. I am pregnant. I was pregnant. My head falls forward and I barely catch it with my fingers. All the times we tried. So many negative tests. Thousands of unanswered prayers. I can't. My shoulders start to tip my body to the side. But I don't care enough to even try to catch myself. Let me slam against the cold linoleum. Maybe it'll wake me up out of this nightmare. Dr. Walker's on his feet faster than a post-60-year-old man should be able to muster, his arm going around my shoulders to keep me from falling off the table. Tears cascade down my face like an open sieve, my wail surely landing on the ears of everyone in the building. He pulls me to him. And it breaks me that I'm being comforted by a medical professional and not my husband. Ty, where are you? I need you. I hear the doctor whisper to someone to call Lindsay Watson at Blown, and I feel like I should tell him not to interrupt her day, but I can't. All I can do is feel myself die a cell at a time.
Elin?
Lindsay asks, shaking me out of my head and my awful memories. I shrug. What do you want me to say? Everything is peachy. My world is bright and a happy place. Lindsay rolls her eyes and drops her hands on the laminated countertop.
No, I don't want you to say that. You've been lost in your own head more today than usual, so I thought maybe something happened. I'm sorry.
I look at her features and instantly regret my attitude. I just had a bad night, I sigh, thinking back to the night before and how I didn't sleep at all. Every minute that ticked off the clock, I was there to watch it. I've only wanted one thing in my life, a family with the man I'm sure even now is my soulmate. If I can't have that, what's left for me? How do you replace that dream when it's all that mattered?
From seeing him?
Yeah, I mumble. He's been gone for weeks and boom, he's back. And then he doesn't even speak to me, Linz, like I'm some stranger.
Give it time.
Time for what? I look at my best friend bewildered. She knows what I've been through.
She picked me up that afternoon and sat with me in the middle of my bed and held me while I came to terms with losing a baby I never knew I was going to have. It was her that picked up the pieces that day. How can she tell me to give it time? Time to work out, Elin. He just came back. He was probably as overwhelmed as you were. He had the advantage of knowing what he was walking into.